thanks for tuning in to the Glossy Podcast. I'm your host, Jill Manoff, and today I'm sitting down with Scott Lux, who is the Global Executive Vice President of E-commerce, Technology, and Innovation at Esprit. The fashion brand had its heyday in the 80s and has recently been attempting a comeback in the U.S. market. When I met Scott last month at Shop Talk, he was very real about the state of the industry and the challenges brands are facing today. He said, and I quote, "Retail is hard and e-commerce is expensive." So I am eager to pick up where we left off. I also want to ask Scott about what's working to get Esprit products in front of the consumer, to get consumers to engage with the product and the brand, and to allow people to shop wherever and whenever they want, which he told me is the name of the game. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to reunite. Did I get everything right? Like, we covered a lot of territory, and I have yet to cover this on Glossy, so I'm excited to talk to you.
Fantastic.
Yes. Tell me about this fancy title. That is a mouthful. E-commerce, technology, and innovation. You're heading this up at Esprit. You started running e-commerce. Tell me about kind of day in the life, what you're overseeing.
Yeah, so most of the focus lately has been around technology and data. Because as we left off at Shop Talk, those two components have become more complex and more expensive. But I think that's the key unlock for any brand to be successful today, is you have to own your own data technology. And the tricky part for a lot of brands is we're not technologists first. So what does it mean to be innovative and drive technology? Because at the end of the day, the product and customer have to be the heroes. And from my perspective, technology has to operate in the background instead of being pushed to the forefront. And I think that's been a big shift we've seen with retail over the last, I'd say probably 5 or 10 years. If we were chatting 10 years ago, it was how much digital do we put in front of the customer, put it in store, because they want a digital e-com experience wherever they are. And we're finding that's not the case. So that's where my focus has really been, is behind the scenes, really trying to enable our channels to be successful. And those channels around e-com, wholesale, and obviously our retail and physical brick and mortar channels.
Yes. Let's talk about that. When we met last time, you were talking about basically these are small format stores or pop-ups, the ones that the brand owns. And basically, for technology to be integrated, of course, it's seamless, but it's kind of an afterthought, because the idea is to, I don't know if that's the word, but the idea is to tell your brand story and to build a connection with the customer who may not know the brand. And it's more about that almost traditional talk. But am I describing it right? Or do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think it's going back to really outlining your customer experience and leading with that first. And typically the way I define customer experience, it has to be centered around the human element. And I think that got kind of thrown by the wayside a little bit over the last 5 or 10 years with digital. And again, back to what we were just saying with store. So you have human, and then you have your physical element, your surroundings, and then last but not least, the digital journey. And so for us, and what I'm focused on, is how do we map out what that right experience is for our consumer, if it's in a pop-up or if it's in one of our physical owned stores or if it's through social channels or even connected TV. We have to map that out and then identify what are the touch points along the way and where does technology need to lean in and support, or can it kind of take a back seat and just help get the customer on their way much faster and easier.
Your background is unique. You started, I think, as a financial consultant, but you also have amazing experience at a variety of brands, from Diesel to Alice and Olivia to Theory. And I think that you have a longer career in digital and e-commerce than most. Talk about your path and how, to what extent, that puts you in an advantage in terms of this area of the business.
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. It started a little bit by accident. So first, my disclaimer, I've always loved technology, been an early adopter along the way. But when I was a financial advisor with Fidelity Investments, we were talking about omnichannel before it was even recognized in retail. Because for us, it's like, oh, do you have someone trade online? Do you have them work with a financial advisor or actually call in? And so we're trying to think about what does that look like in terms of the whole financial advice network side of things. And happened to be in Seattle for the first.com boom and really had an opportunity to cut my teeth on product management with a startup back then called GoToNet. Interesting fact, they were one of the very first search engines. So born out of the University of Washington about 2 years before Google came onto the scenes. So really interesting to see how that evolved and being in product management at that time. Had the opportunity over the years to move into online banking. And the reason I want to bring up online banking in Washington Mutual is we had a CMO at the time, Brad Davis. And one of the things that stuck with me is he said, you know, I don't want to hire bankers because I can teach anyone banking, but I want to hire people that come from retail because Washington Mutual was really trying to take a commoditized product and make it more experiential before what you're seeing today with Capital One. I think if wherever Brad Davis is sitting, Capital One's probably that incarnation of what he envisioned back then. It's kind of the unbank, if you will. And at that time, got to know a gentleman by the name Shane Atchison, who founded a small digital agency called Zaz. And we were one of the pioneers in data and analytics. So back then, working with Core Metrics and Omniture before Google Analytics came onto the scene. And what was unique is before we would put pen to paper, we would step back, work with our clients and partners and say, okay, what are your success metrics and objectives? How do we measure those? And then how do we optimize? And I think having that foundation, this was back in 2006, really stuck with me throughout my career because from that point forward, always looked at things through the lens of data and how do we activate and take action from data that we're seeing. And then you pivot to moving to New York in 2008 with the agency. We had just got acquired by WPP. And you actually started to see coming out of the recession of 2008, a lot of your smaller middle tier brands becoming more commerce enabled. Because before that, social media was just barely a blip on the radar. Mobile iPhone had just launched 2007, 2008. So most brands in their digital experience were pushing kind of marketing brochureware, but conversion was happening offsite, you know, save for the bigger players, the Nikes of the world. So I had the opportunity to really grow up in digital, launching e-commerce for brands such as L'Oreal, as you alluded to, Diesel, did some work with American Express, Intermix at Gap. And I think one of the components that's interesting is you kind of have to work and you've seen the ebbs and flows of e-commerce. And when you and I were talking before and what you alluded to earlier is retail is really hard. If it was easy, you'd see a ton more success stories out there. But having kind of gone through these different iterations and cycles and working with founder or creative-led brands to kind of management-led brands, Intermix and Gap, you kind of see the difference in how to navigate that world through retail and digital commerce.
Yes. I mean, what a challenge. And the theory has typically been, I think for a lot of the direct-to-consumer brands, is you don't have a large retail footprint, so you don't have the same costs. But on the note of expensive, like, does it add up this day and age? Would you say it's comparable, digital versus physical?
Yeah, I would say digital is almost more expensive now just because of cost of media. So again, going back 5 years, 10 years ago, it was that very conversation. It's like, oh yeah, drive to e-com. That's our lower cost channel. It'll be cheaper. But what you're looking at is cost of shipping is expensive, the environmental consequence of it, cost of media that we alluded to. Now all the technology you need to run your digital ecosystem, all the partners are expensive, talent and staff. So in fact, it's actually become probably one of the most expensive channels to operate, especially compared to retail, not to mention wholesale.
What team members or partners are crucial? Or maybe you're hiring them under you, or you are working with outside agencies. There was, I'm sorry to keep referring to a conversation none of our listeners were part of. Hi, guys, you're here too. But you talked about a bias against brands. Talk to me a little bit about that. And basically, like, everybody has their own agenda, but where you need to make sure that the data or the information that they're giving you is working toward, it's beneficial for you, or what they're doing for you is working toward your end goal. I don't know if that was the point.
Yeah, kind of. What we were talking about is, I think I'd made kind of the cliched comment that the whole marketing funnel is dead. Used to be that it was broken, everyone says, oh, it's no longer linear. But now there's really no concept of marketing funnels. So when you're asking which team members I'm looking to hire the most is really internal data engineers and data scientists, because that has to be our IP that we own going forward, and they'll take us into the future. Because again, as I had mentioned, we're not technologists. Product's the hero and customer's the hero. And data is really the only thing that can unify those two and give us the insights we need to drive a modern retail business. The second piece is, I think the deck is stacked against brands. So if you look at, you know, Meta and Google, for example, going back a couple of years ago, you could run campaigns and just do lookalike audiences, and media was cheap, not as competitive. And now it's all kind of a black box algorithm where Meta and Facebook and Google PMax are saying, oh, just step back, put your money there. We'll optimize it, and trust us that conversion's happening where we say it is, traffic's qualified. And you really don't know if that's the case. Furthermore, they can't really tell you causality and what is truly driving the revenue. Was it a campaign that ran in PMax? Was it the creative? Was it a target? So I think that's where kind of the platforms, they have a vested interest to self-serve and run as much ad spend as they can. Agencies, I think, are becoming more challenging because, again, the model typically that you operate, I have a ton of good agency friends, so no offense to anyone if they're listening. The good ones know who they are, but there's a lot of them, they're just saying, okay, give us 10 to 12%. We'll manage that. But, oh, by the way, we're just putting it in another algorithm. And so I'm looking for team members that can hold agencies accountable, that if needed, can get in there, roll up their sleeves, look into the platform, really determine when a change was made, and can that drive causality? And I'm being very deliberate in using the word causality, because a lot of times as marketers, we get caught up in talking about incrementality, but I think they're very different and slightly nuanced. I'm more concerned with what is the cause, so we can try to find ways to repeat and continue to scale that versus looking at purely incrementality and efficiency. So that's why I really try to focus on the data engineer and data science as kind of our critical hires going forward.
Tell me about the data we are zeroing in on. There are a bazillion points of data. And I hear, you know, obviously it's important, the like predictive lifetime value and all of those numbers, is that where it's at, and segmentation and all those, yes. All that jazz.
Exactly. Yes. 100% is you really have to get those foundations and kind of basics down first. And it's always a challenge for brands because you have a lot of different systems. You have your e-commerce system, whether you're running on, you know, an in-house custom or Shopify or Salesforce Commerce, Magento. You have wholesale, you have your retail POS. So even just to really understand what one system may call an order versus a transaction, that is truly the same data point. So I think focusing in on getting foundational pieces there, and that's first and foremost your segments. And it really doesn't have to be complex. It's looking at high, medium, low value and VIP. And maybe you add in new to brand. And once you at least start having that segment, you can then start to look at purchase behaviors and predicted lifetime value, customer lifetime value. And ultimately, where I'm trying to push internally to look at is what is our cost of acquisition across whatever channel that is, and can we afford to acquire new customers based on spend, or do we need to drive increased frequency from our existing customer set. And that all really comes down to the segments. How many new customers do I need to drive to meet my revenue targets? And then can we afford to acquire them, or do we need to get more out of our existing base? And right there, that grouping alone gives you and your teams quite a bit to work on to help push towards more profitable, healthy revenue.
Right on. Tell me about growth in the States. Are you guys looking to grow fast? And what does that look like in terms of the channels that you're leaning into?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely looking to grow in the U.S. That's a market we haven't had a presence in for quite a while. And I think there's a lot of excitement about how do we show up in that market. People, myself, that remember, you know, shopping Esprit in the 80s and 90s versus introducing Esprit to a new generation. And it's kind of what you and I were talking about earlier. It's really going where that customer is. So looking at social channels, one area that I'm interested in is connected TV and streaming. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And then continue to put an emphasis on our wholesale channels and wholesale partners as well. And then, of course, we'll continue to test into pop-up locations. But again, it comes back to having that data and really understanding what you can test into. Well, let me back up. Before we even test, what does that success metric look like for us? And then having those metrics and testing into it and seeing where we need to adjust to hit the growth targets.
Right on. I think that you're in specialty stores. There's a good range happening right now in the U.S. Yeah, and maybe in talks with Nordstrom. I don't know if that's officially happened yet. What wholesale partners make sense?
Oh, gosh. That's probably a better question for our wholesale team, but I think you nailed it. It's really looking at...
But wholesale's working.
Yes. Yeah, and I think what's really interesting, I think, when you look at retail as a whole, I think wholesale is working. I think there's some challenges that we'll continue to keep an eye on with marketplaces. And I think that's another area that we're focused on is striking that balance with our wholesale partners. What does marketplace experience look like? Because you've seen some of the pressure that Net's been under, Moda and Matches. And I think for us, it's how do we show up so that you yourself or listeners can discover Esprit and where is that right moment? And I think for a while, for a lot of the discoverability, there was overemphasis on marketplaces. So for us, we think there's a select few specialty retailers, wholesalers, as you mentioned, whether it's Nordstrom, Urban Outfitters, or being present within socials or other touch points that could be events, it could be experiential, where you expect that discoverability to happen. And if you bring that full circle, right now, I think you can all pick up your phone. And once you discover a brand, a lot of people aren't necessarily going through back to that funnel approach. They may be ready to make an immediate purchase. So that's where technology comes in to make sure we're commerce enabled to support that.
Nice. Does that mean showing up on TikTok shop and selling via Instagram and in any and every platform in a way that makes sense for the brand in a beautiful way?
Exactly. And I think that goes back to the other component we're talking about. That's why technology, on the one hand, I love that's become so flexible with modern partners, such as we're exploring a company called Pipe 17, which is more of a modern OMS iPass, but they have built-in connections that can work with not only Shopify upstream or Commerce Cloud, but into TikTok shops, into New Order on wholesale, into connected TV. So no longer do we have to build these custom integrations. We can partner with them and you have structured data right away. You have a connection right away. So you not only get the commerce and catalog and conversion happening, but you get the data throughput as well.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. Well, for those who aren't as familiar with Esprit, I was mistaken. It is not a brand that was birthed in France. Anyway, this is a San Francisco brand from back in the day. It took off in Europe more recently thriving in Europe as opposed to being introduced to the U.S. But I know in the European market, it was more of a, I don't know, would you call it like a mass brand? Or it's not as high-end or maybe as you're repositioning it in the States. Talk to me about what's happening between the two markets and the challenges involved.
Yeah, so Europe's our largest market, and I think it's catered to a different segment in that market. And I think that's where, again, going back to the data, is really looking at what resonates with the customer. And that's why we've been so keen on building out our data infrastructure, our data cloud platform as well, so that we can understand what may work in Germany is different than Netherlands, is different than Spain, is different than the US. So because the brand has been operating for so long in Europe, it's a different sensibility. And what we're balancing out is how do we reintroduce the brand in the U.S., but know that there's two potential different markets and operating ethos, if you will, and making sure we serve the customer, again, the right product that they're expecting within those markets. And then over time, we'll see where do we, again, push and have opportunities or kind of that white space where we can gain a competitive advantage and meet customer needs that may be going unmet today.
Yes. Also, a great business in Asia. Is that still happening?
That is a little bit, I would say, kind of our third market. So again, one of our growth opportunities. And I think going back to retail is really looking at where can we focus and try to get as much traction as possible. And again, build out efficiencies because having different tech components or capabilities that are unique to each market really doesn't necessarily work. We have to find scalable components that can serve all those markets.
Yes. Talk to me about the U.S. consumer and the challenge involved in terms of like getting their buy-in. Is it about reaching a Gen Z customer who, again, wasn't familiar with the brand? That is a challenging customer. Also, talk about challenges. There is some recent like negative press, or I would say they're calling out the challenges that Esprit is having in the U.S. market. And I want like certain things like Esprit said these store closures were always pop-ups. When we talked, you didn't tell me they're pop-ups. They are pop-ups. Anyway, they weren't permanent stores that were closing. This was as planned. But is in terms of the set plan and where you are in terms of the planned path, how would you describe the traction and what's to come from here?
Yeah, I think it's exciting. I mean, that's what I always love about retail. I grew up, my dad was a retailer back in the day. So I love the combination of retail and technology because it's evolving and changing. And just even the fact that we're talking about Gen Z today, where it was millennials not too long ago. And I think overall, I get really cautious to oversimplify and put people in certain generation clusters because there's behaviors that a Gen Z, a millennial, or even a Gen X can have that are very similar. So again, I hate to keep emphasizing this, but that's why data is so critical because it takes away this easy knee-jerk reaction to go say, we're going to focus on Gen Z. We think we have some really, really good product. We think there's a lot around nostalgia that's there that creates that emotional connection because that's really, at the end of the day, what resonates and what brands are about. And for us is where do we tap into that? And again, going back to where's that white space that we can test into and grow and have a sustainable path forward. So I think with Gen Z, yeah, there's a lot of challenges. But again, when we were talking, you know, 15 minutes ago, even 10 or 15 years ago, it was a different conversation, but you still had challenges on how do you attract and acquire and drive that awareness. And again, I think it's really just showing up in the places customers expect you to and being able to capture whatever that success metric looks like at that given point.
How do you think of innovation? Are brands trying too hard to do something sexy? But how do you consider it? It's just nailing the data that you're leveraging matches the goal, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, I would say to me, if innovation is if the technology is just working behind the scenes, and you as a consumer, me as a consumer, your listeners don't even notice it's there, then that's innovation and success. If you walk into the store and you can check out through a mobile POS, or if you go into a company that's using RFID and they can identify they have a certain item in the stock room and it's all seamless, you don't really care what's making that work as long as your need is fulfilled at that moment in time, or you're watching a streaming show on Hulu and a QR code pops up and it can take you to an exclusive jersey because you're watching a live stream of your favorite MLS team. So all those pieces, there's a lot of technology behind the scenes. And to me, that's what innovation looks like. If we can just get it in the background and make our lives easier, then it's successful. And I think that's a fairly significant pivot, again, from where we were 5 or 10 years ago, where it was really magic mirrors, put as much tech in front of the consumer as possible, and that that's what they expect. And I think it's the exact opposite now.
Yes. How are you using AI and where do you see the actual potential there?
Oh, man. So AI is interesting. I mean, obviously a lot of potential, but we've actually been using AI for quite a while. If you go back to machine learning, which is a variation or early part of AI, we've been using that for personalization. Back to our data science team has been creating models that are used not only within internal to help drive product recommendations. We use AI on image identification to help with our product catalog. So those are some of the early stages. But before you can make significant leaps forward, you have to have that strong, clean data foundation and data governance. We've seen a lot of talk lately just around data and quality of data. I think I was reading a report, I'll have to see where it was, saying that almost AI has scoured the internet and has used or captured all the data that's out there. They're almost starting to make up data to train some of the models because there's no more useful data. So I think that's the other side of it is, for me, it's a combination of getting our infrastructure correct, having strong data governance, and kind of taking a little bit of a wait and see approach and not pushing as far as possible to say AI is going to take over everything, but where can we leverage it from a consumer standpoint and to drive internal efficiency as well?
Kind of related, but not really. The new privacy laws and the importance of first party data and getting people to maybe come onto your site and enter their email address. Like, is that top priority? Have the changes that we're seeing with iOS and Meta, everything's changing and the whole landscape is more complicated. But of course it's complicated. Yes. But like, what's the workaround? How is this impacting your business and your processes?
Yeah, so quite a bit. The good news with Esprit being a global company, and for me, we've had kind of a lot of best practices we can take from GDPR, because that is still kind of the gold standard that's out there, which actually makes life a lot easier to operate in Europe because you have a standard set. Now, it's very strict. And what they've done is they've actually have severe penalties if you violate any of GDPR that can go a certain percent against revenue. So it actually has some teeth into it. So you have to take it more seriously than perhaps a lot of brands do in the U.S. In the U.S., it's challenging because it's very fractured at the moment. You have California leading the way. Virginia is doing some interesting things here in New York State. So that's part of the challenge is how do we operate where each of the states are kind of doing their own because the federal government, one, doesn't really understand it. We won't go down the path of TikTok, but I think that gives you a clear example where they're just misaligned in how they think about technology. So it's pushed to where you could have 50 different states, each with their own privacy policy. But GDPR does give us a good baseline to operate with. But again, it goes back to that whole saying that we just have to be sensible and err on the side of caution and do what's right for our customer and how we maintain and handle the customer data. And so that gives us a good lens to look at. The second piece that we were talking through earlier, which is why, again, it's so critical and I'm focusing my efforts on our data, hiring data scientists, data engineers, because of the platforms and some of the opaqueness with privacy and what Apple's imparted, doesn't mean you can't capture your own data. It just makes it harder for cross-sharing and platform data to extract out of iOS and that side of it. So from that perspective, we're really looking at, okay, how do we track our own data and do it in a way that is sensitive to customer rights and what we need to actually drive the business? And that gives us a good lens to look at.
I know that like the word omnichannel is out. What's the new word? Like shopping everywhere. Is there a new word?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the new word is composable. Is everything's composable, right? So you have composable data platforms. You have composable commerce. So I think that's kind of the new buzzword that's floating around.
As brands are operating this way, we spoke in the past, about silos internally? How are you set up to work together with the digital team, with the wholesale team, with the data team? And probably because you're relaunching or emerging in the States and rebuilding the business, you're set up that way. But is that what's like a detriment to a lot of brands where like they're attempting to operate in an omnichannel way, they're not structurally set up for success?
Yeah, it's still really, really tricky. A lot of brands I've worked with in the past, because they've been around 25 or 30 years, and to really change organizationally and a lot of the silos that are there is tough. I think you are seeing a lot of progress with brands hiring a chief revenue officer. So it does get some of that consolidation and gets rid of kind of the silo between e-com, retail, and wholesale. So I think that is starting to help align, at least from a revenue-driving perspective. The other piece I'd like to see is around cost. And back to everything you're saying around e-commerce and technology becoming more expensive, but it serves all three channels. So again, how do you allocate those costs and have a right-sized P&L so that one channel doesn't get more favorability than the others? But I think ultimately collaboration, and I go back to data. One of the really interesting things we did that stood out for me back in October, we hosted our first ever data program offsite. And what I realized early on is data lived in two different components, well, really three. You had our e-commerce team capturing data from their e-commerce technology and what they were running. You had the marketing team, mainly the digital marketing team that had its own technology stack. And then the other side of the house, we had, quote unquote, our IT team, which had all of our ERP transactional data and our business intelligence. Those three teams rarely talked, and not to mention we'll get to GDPR and compliance in a moment. So I thought, okay, let's host a data platform or data program, really a two-day summit, to bring together those teams, talk about our way forward. We invited a couple of guest speakers from additional verticals and brands. And I thought, okay, we'll host it in Amsterdam. We'll get maybe 10 or 15 people. We had 60 people show up in person, including our head of compliance and legal in Germany. And she said, this was great because usually they don't get invited to a lot of the sessions or summits we do. But the other side of it is just realizing, getting them connected with the teams. They're not there to necessarily block us doing things, but if we loop them in early enough, they'll help us problem solve. And so I think that was really an interesting example, having legal and compliance, our technology team, we had channels, we had product and planning, merchandising, and really to see how can we operate with data? What do we have today? Some of the incredible work the team is already doing, but also hearing from speakers in other verticals and industries on what the path forward looks like. And I think that's a really good example where you don't have to go through a full reorg, but to host a summit or to start getting people involved and see what's feasible, get them talking one-on-one in person, I think can make all the difference in the world. And that gave us a good footprint to start building our data program around.
Yes, rally the troops, bring them all together. So smart. Oh my gosh, fun question. Like what are consumers doing now that's like blowing your mind? Anything surprise you lately about when you're eyeing all this data?
Not really. Although I will say in our New York office, the one thing that I'm still really curious about, we had a gentleman, we'll leave his name out of it and where he's from, but he was actually using Vision Pro in the office. And it was kind of, I haven't really seen it in the work environment, but it's kind of surreal because he was sitting like you and I are talking on our laptop, except he had no screen. He had a mouse and he was literally looking around. And so that kind of blew my mind because I've seen a lot of the videos, a lot of commentary, haven't used it myself, but seeing it in action in the work setting was pretty interesting. So I'm really curious to see some of the applications and where that ends up going. And hopefully for the better and productivity, but not so much where we become more and more siloed as we were just talking. But that was one area that kind of caught my attention that's interesting both from a consumer and work standpoint.
I agree. It's the future. What can we expect from Esprit this year?
Oh, I think continuing to see lots of us reaching back to the archives, if you will, for some of our product that was beloved by generation. And I think from a technology and data standpoint, we'll continue to be pushing things behind the scenes. So looking for kind of surprise elements or nuggets just to make that customer journey and experience that much better.
Amazing. Excited to see all your success this year. Scott, thank you for being here. This was so fun.
Thanks. Likewise. Good to catch up again.
That's all for this episode. Our theme music is by Otis McDonald. If you liked this episode, be sure to share it with someone else you think would. Thanks for listening to the Glossy Podcast.